Today is January 27th, and this is a new course in Reading Pali, Lesson 2. Okay, we stop one time. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Okay, so we are on lesson 2, and first we'll take the grammar. Do they seem to be giving you too much grammar? Okay, but a lot of this you already should know from the previous book. Niman eating to Dao. Okay, so here at the beginning of lesson 2, of grammar 2, we have the feminine nouns ending in the long A, like sala, which means a hall. And so this you just have to become familiar with the declension. There's nothing to explain. Except one really tricky thing with the long A feminine nouns, and long A is the vocative, which ends in E. So if there's, say, a woman whose name is Buddha, and if somebody is calling her, they would call her Budde. Budde. Okay, then we have the masculine nouns ending in the short U. Here the example is Bhikkhu. Again, there's no alternative but to learn the declension system. And in the sutta style of Pali, for the genitive dative, bhikkhuno is most common, not bhikkhusa. That would be very rare, maybe in verse. And for the instrumental ablative, bhikkhuna would be most common. And then, as you already know, in the sutta, when the vocative plural is used, we have this rather unusual, it's like called the East Indian form, Bhikkhave. Okay, then we have the neuter nouns in the short U. And these are basically similar to the masculine nouns in the short U, except that we have the nominative singular. One form of the nominative singular is Chakung. Occasionally you get it in that form. And the plural, you could have Chakuni, the long U and I. Otherwise it's the same, the declension is the same as masculine nouns in U, like Bhikkhu. Okay, then we have pages of pronouns, starting with the masculine third person pronoun forms. Okay, we have the masculine form declined here, shown first. So the masculine, we have the nominative. The normal nominative is so. Accusative, tongue. This has the masculine neuter feminine. Then masculine. Okay, masculine nominative, so, accusative, tongue. Then the neuter is almost the same as the masculine, except the nominative also is tongue. But then genitive, dative, instrumental, ablative, locative are all the same as the masculine. Then the feminine singular is sa. That's her. And the accusative is tongue. But then we have the genitive dative, usually tasa or tisa. Then instrumental ablative, taya. And then the locative, I guess it can be any of these four. Tasang, Tayang, Tisang, Tasang. And these pronouns can either stand on their own, in which case it means he, she, or that, or else the pronoun can come in front of a noun, in which case it will be like, let me see, so bhikkhu, that monk, sa upasika, that laywoman, or tongue can just mean that, or say tongue chitang, that state of mind. So the pronoun can be either a noun standing by itself, or it can function as a pronoun adjective that is going along with another noun. Okay, then the next page we have the plural forms. Okay, then first we have the masculine, te. Then the neuter is tani. And then apart from the difference, the nominative and accusative for the masculine is te, both te. And for the neuter, both nominative, accusative, tani. So you have to determine whether it's nominative or accusative based on context, based on how it is used. But then the other cases are the same for masculine and neuter, genitive and dative. Taesung, I don't think I've ever seen taesanung. If it occurs, it must be very rare. But taesung is the usual. Then instrumental ablative, usually tehi. Tebi is more, maybe you find it in verse, in poetry. And locative, tesu. Okay, then the feminine, we have either nominative, accusative, either ta or tayo. Then genitive, dative. I think the usual is tasung. I think tasanum may be rare. Then instrumental ablative, tahi, and locative, tasu. Again, you have to I mean, it's good if you can memorize them, but if you can't memorize them, at least be able to recognize them so that you can look at the table in order to be able to identify the form. Okay, now you can change the nuance of any of these pronouns a little bit by putting an E in front of the word. In this case, the meaning changes a little bit from that to this. So the forms with etang were forms like etang, like eso, etang, esa. That indicates an object or a person that's closer, usually closer to the speaker than so or ta or tongue. So you could say aso, etang, esa is more like this rather than that. Then let's jump over now, cross the page. I'll come back to the relative pronoun, but 2.14. Here we have another set of pronouns which also mean this. Here we have the masculine ayang, the accusative imang, the neuter can be either imang or idang. I think the neuter idang might be more common. And then the feminine is also ayang and imang. And the plural for the masculine, ime, neuter, imani, and the feminine, either ima or imayo. So both, there are also the indirect cases, but I think they will introduce them later. You know, the instrumental, ablative, dative, genitive, but they'll introduce later. Okay, and so both the ayang, idang forms and the aso, etang, esa forms mean this, even though the book says that. But those are forms that are closer to the speaker, so they make better sense. It makes better sense to render them this. And I don't know any difference, real difference, between the aso, etang, esa forms and the ayang, idang, ayang forms. It's just, it seems to me, the difference in usage, a little bit indeterminate. Okay, you have the book? Oh. Is there a copy? Are you sure that there is one there? Okay, so now we'll go across to the relative pronoun. Okay, now the relative pronoun is, you can see it's used usually with, well, it's used with the Y in front of a pronoun, indicates a relative pronoun. And the relative pronoun is almost always used together with the demonstrative pronoun. I think we have to have some examples to see how they're used. If you go to page 24, this is section 6. You see the example here, young janami tung banami. So what, here, young means what, not the question, but the relative pronoun, that which, janami, I know, tongue, that, banami, I say. Or here we have another, yo dhammo, that sounds very weird, yo dhammo saddhammo, so dhammo sanantino. So yo dhammo saddhammo, that doctrine which is the good doctrine or the true doctrine, saddhammo. Then we have the demonstrative pronoun, so dhammo sanantino. That doctrine is eternal. So yo dhammo saddhammo, that's called the relative clause. The relative clause has a relative pronoun, yo. Then the demonstrative clause, so dhammo sanantino, that doctrine is eternal. Let's see if we could find another example. Okay, go to page 26. And we take the reading number 1, and you go down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines. The line that begins, Yang Bhikkhave Lobha Pakatang Kamang. You see that? Okay, we just need these words because the words that come after are just synonyms for the same thing. So, Yang Bhikkhave Lobha Pakatang Kamang. Then go down to the next line, Tang Kamang Akusalang. Okay, so Yang, here, you see, when the Buddha speaks, he puts the vocative not at the beginning the way we do in English. In English, we would say, O monks, then follow. But in Pali, the style is to start with some other word, then have the vocative. So yang goes with lobha pakatang kamang. So this means, which kama, or whatever kama, is done out of greed? Then we can jump down, tang kamang akusalam. That karma is unwholesome. And then go down towards the bottom, we just take the opposite. Last paragraph on this page, line 4 up. Yang bhikkhave aloba katang kamang tung kamang kusalang. So first we have the relative clause. What is the relative clause? The clause is longer than the relative pronoun. So what is the relative clause? All the words.
Pakatanga.
Yeah. Aloba nidanang, aloba samudayang. So all of that is the relative clause. It all goes with yang. So, whichever kama, whatever karma is done out of greed, out of non-greed, born from non-greed, caused by non-greed, originating from non-greed, then we have the demonstrative clause. What is the demonstrative clause? Yeah. And then whatever comes after that. Tang kamang anavajang, tang kamang sukavipakang, tang kamang kamanirodaya sangvatati, na tang kamang sam kama samudhayaya sangvatati. Okay, so whatever karma is done out of non-greed, born from non-greed, caused by non-greed, originating from non-greed, then the demonstrative, that karma is wholesome, that karma is blameless, that karma has a pleasant result, and so on.
And so.
Okay, let me just make up a sentence. Okay. Yo bhikkhu pamatto viharati, so bhikkhu dukkhang so bhikkhu dukkhang anubhavati. You don't have to be concerned with all of the words, but, okay, yo bhikkhu, the monk who, pamatto viharati, lives heedless, or lazy, or negligent, so bhikkhu, that monk, dukkang anubhavati, that monk experiences dukkha, misery. So bhikkhu appamatto viharati, so bhikkhu nibbana patto hoti. So that monk who lives, you see, yo bhikkhu, that monk who appamatto viharati lives diligent or heedful. So, bhikkhu, nibbana patto hoti. That monk is one who attains nibbana. So in English, we have it a little bit easy. We would just say, the monk who is diligent attains nibbana. But in Pali, usually there is, maybe almost invariably, the relative clause, the one who does this, and the demonstrative clause. He or she is the one who gets, does that.
Bhante?
Yeah.
It's called relative because it refers to the person. Is that?
Well, they both refer to the person. It's relative, we would say, because it's referring to a subject who has not yet been completed, or the statement about that person has not yet been completed. It introduces the subject, but that hasn't yet completed the statement about him. So, for example, I can say, I don't need the relative clause. I can say, that monk is living diligently. And so in this case, it's a simple statement. So I'm making a definite statement about that monk. But if I say, the monk who lives diligently, it's relative because it's referring to something about that monk, but the definite statement about that monk has not yet been made. The definite statement comes with the demonstrative pronoun, or with the demonstrative clause. The monk who is living diligently, so that's relative, so there's a kind of open who there, the one who, then that has to be completed by saying something definite about him. He is the one who attains nibbana, or he is the one who experiences happiness.
So then, Bhante, can we just use the relative without the demonstrative?
No.
No.
You can use a demonstrative without a relative, but you can't use a relative without a demonstrative.
This makes a lot of sense. Thank you, Bhante.
Otherwise, the relative is like hanging. Maybe you could say the relative pronoun is like a boy in a tree hanging from a branch without a branch under him. But if the boy is hanging from the tree by a branch and he's standing on a branch, that's like the sentence with the relative pronoun and the demonstrative pronoun.
So it looks like with the relative it introduces some dependencies.
Exactly. Right? We could call it a dependent clause.
Thank you, Bhante.
The relative is dependent. Okay, coming back to the pronouns. Okay, just at the bottom of page 21, it speaks about what's called, this is the interrogative pronoun. And I don't think we had this one in Lily de Silva, but this is the one that's more common in Sutta-style Pali, and that is kattama, which means which or what, asking a question. So it can be masculine, and it can refer to a person. Let me just see if I can get into a sutta where we will find some examples. Okay, here they've just introduced the masculine kattamo and the accusative. Well, the masculine nominative kattamo, accusative kattamang. For the neuter, whether it's masculine or accusative, it's kattamang. For the feminine, it's the nominative is kattama, and the accusative is kattamang. And again, the masculine interrogative can be referring to a male person or male animal, but also it can refer to an inanimate object that is takes the masculine case. And similarly, the feminine can refer to a female person, or an object that takes the feminine case. They've just introduced the singular. Let me go to the Book of Ones, then we get more ones. Okay, here's a good example of the interrogative pronoun. If you look on the, okay, here, if you look here on the board or on the wall. So we have Eka Pugalo Bhikkhave Loke Upajamano Upajati Bahujana Hitaya Bahujana Sukhaya Lokanukampaya Ataya Hitaya Sukhaya Deva Manusanang. Then Kattamo Eka Pugalo. So Eka Pugalo means one person. Then here, O monks. Then what grammatical form? Upajamano. What is this? It's nominative, but what is the grammatical form?
Oh, is it the relative clause?
No, no. Here we don't have relative demonstrative.
Singular.
It's singular, but how to put this question?
Function.
What kind of function? It's qualifying the subject. We had these forms in Lily De Silva. I'll give you a hint. Present. Right.
Present participle.
It's the present participle. It means arising. So one person arising in the world arises. Then what cases are these? Bahujana hitaya, bahujana sukhaya, lokanukampaya. What case?
Dative.
Say again?
Dative.
Right.
Dative.
Right. These are datives. So, arises for the welfare of many people, then for happiness of many people, then this will be out of compassion for the world, then for the good, welfare, happiness of deities and people. Then here we have what one person, or who is that one person? What one person? And then the answer comes, the Tathagata Arahat, fully enlightened one. Then here we have the pronoun ayang, this, O monks, is the one person, this one person, arising in the world, arises for the welfare of many people, for the happiness of many people, and so on. Any questions on the pronouns? Is there a secret formula for memorizing them? No secret formula, but you'll see that there's a lot of similarity between the pronouns once you get used to them, the different types of pronouns. You'll see a lot of similarity. Okay, then we come to the infinitive. You remember this? We had this in Lily De Silva. So the infinitive ending is tung. And so to form the infinitive, you could add it to the present tense stem with I-T-U-M replacing the final A. So for example, we have the verb buffeti, which means to be or to become. We have a present stem, bhava. Then we form the infinitive, bhavitung. Now, gacchati, it's actually, the usual form is a bit irregular. So we'll skip. Okay, they give one form for gacchati, gacchitung. But you don't see that very often. The usual form is gantung, which is irregular. Labhati, so we could form the infinitive. You just take off A-T-I and put on I-T-U-M, labhitung. Or pasati, to form it, pasitung. Let's take the verb upajati. It's not here. How do you form the infinitive? Right. Upajitung. Let's take the verb vayamati, which means to make an effort.
What
I said, vayami. Vayamati.
Vayamitung.
Right, Kim said it. Vayamitung. Sunati, to hear. Sunati, to hear.
Sunito. Sunito.
Yeah, I think Venerable Satchinanda said Sunitung. There's another form for that, which is irregular, Sotung. Okay, now, when the verb ends in the long A, E, O, then we add the tung directly to the verb. So you see some examples they give. We have anyati, which means to comprehend, to understand. So here we have the present stem, anya, and then we don't take that ah off, but just add tung to the ah, so anyatung, to comprehend, to teach, deseti. So here we add tung to dese, dese tung. Neti, to lead, the infinitive is netung. Yati, to go, another verb meaning to go. And so the infinitive is yatung. And hoti, I guess we'd form it hotung. Then here are some irregular forms of the infinitive. Again, you should be able to recognize them. Some of them are quite common, like from the verb karoti, one does. We have the infinitive katum, to do. For gachati, gantung. And janati is nyatung. Titati is tatung. Dahati, actually this dahati is conforming to the same model as given in 4.1. I don't know why they call it irregular. Dahati, so dahitung. Okay, dati, one gives, so the infinitive is datung. Pasati, I'm just going to skip over for the time being. Okay, papunati. Also, this illustrates the regular pattern. Papunitum. Pivati. We have the infinitive patung. Then miati. Dies. That's because miyati is a passive based on the stem mur, or the root mur. Murati also means to die. So murati, to die. Then it's actually regular. Muritung. Murati, one dies. Muritung, to die. Now, lubbati has two infinitives. One is the more regular form, lubitung, and the other is this irregular form, luddung. And then vikinati, this seems like a regular form, vikinitung. And the verb sunoti, that would form the infinitive sotung. But if we take the other form, sunati, then it's the regular form, sunitung. Okay, then they explain the use of the infinitive. So they say that there are two primary uses. Okay, one of them, the most common, is to express purpose. So here it's quite similar to the dative, and it's quite similar to the way the infinitive is used in English. So they give a sample sentence. Bhutaṃ gatvaṃ gacchāmi. I am going to see the Buddha. Well, you could also use the other infinitive. Bhūtaṃ, a more regulative one, Bhūtaṃ dasitum gacchāmi. I want to buy rice. Ahang, that's I. Rice, okay. Buttang. To buy kinitung. So the verb meaning one buys is kinati. So the infinitive will be Kini Tum, and I want will be Ichami. Okay, I want to hear the Dharma. But let's say he, that man, so Puriso wants to hear the Dharma. Can you see people on the internet? No, not very well.
Not clear. Oh, no, okay.
It look?
Yeah.
Is it in the right order or? Or backwards?
In the right order, but it.
So Buddhiso Dhamma Soni Utomita Vichari.
Okay, I think we'll go on. Okay, let's go on. Okay, the second use of the infinitive. This is a rather specialized use with, they say, with an adjective like Bubba, which means to be capable or to be able to do something. And they give an example. Papaniko abhabo anadigatang bogang adigantung. Papaniko means a merchant. And so the merchant here is the subject of the sentence. In what case?
Nominative.
Right, it's the nominative. And then we have the adjective abubbo, which means incompetent or incapable or unable. So the merchant is unable. Then with unable, we have the infinitive, adigantung, to acquire. Then the object is bogang, which means wealth. And then unadigantung, this is a negative, which means not acquired, not yet acquired. So the merchant is unable to acquire wealth not yet acquired. So here we have the infinitive, adiguntung, used together with abubbo, unable, unable. Okay, and then they say this, I'm not so clear about the meaning of this. Note that the infinitive may take the same objects with which that verb can occur in an independent sentence, and that their cases remain the same. Does anybody understand this? I think what it means is that the object of the infinitive, let's say duttung, which means to see, is the accusative in that sentence, buddhang, the Buddha. And that their cases remain the same. So whether, I think the point is, whether it's the infinitive or if you're saying, I see the Buddha, Ahang Buddhang Passami, or I am going to see the Buddha, Ahang Buddhang Dattung Gacchami. The verb pasati or passami, I see, and the infinitive Dattung, to see, both take the accusative. The subject, however, is almost always the same as that of the main verb, and if so, is unexpressed. Anybody clear about that? I think the sense, it doesn't seem to make any sense to me. So I don't understand it, and I've somehow managed to learn Pali. So I don't think you have to understand. Okay, we'll take one more grammar section, then we'll go to a reading passage. I'm getting burnt out with grammar. Okay, equational sentences. Okay, equational sentences are those in which a noun or adjective expression is predicated of the subject. In other words, the subject and some other word describing the subject are both referring to the same thing. So they give some examples in English. Okay, Harry is a carpenter. So Harry is a carpenter. This is different from saying Harry hits the nail. So in that case, Harry is the subject, hits is the verb, and nail is the object. But when I say Harry is a carpenter, what is the verb?
Yes.
And what is the object? Anybody else have any idea? What is the object? What is the subject? Anybody online? What is the object? Kim?
The object is really Harry, but it's Harry as a carpenter.
There is no object.
Okay, that is correct. That's the correct answer. There's no object. You have an object when there's a verb expresses action going from the subject to the object. Harry pays the carpenter. So Harry is the customer, and he calls the carpenter to maybe make a table for him. The carpenter gives him the table, and so Harry pays the carpenter. Or maybe the carpenter makes a pass at Harry's wife. So Harry hits the carpenter. So here, Harry hits the carpenter. What is the subject? Harry. What is the verb? Hits. What is the object?
Carpenter.
You can't say there's no object because the carpenter got hit so badly that he died. Whether he lives or dies, the carpenter is the object. Harry hits the carpenter.
So, Bhante, so typically with the verb is, then there's no object then, right? Typically.
I think it in an equation, when is used in an equational sentence, then we would say there's no object. But we could say Harry is going to hit the carpenter. Okay. The dog bit the cat. What is the subject?
Dog.
Yeah. What is the verb? What is the object? Cat. The dog is a dachshund. What is the subject? What is the verb? What is the object? Right.
No object.
Okay.
You want to see the dachshund?
You could hold up the dachshund. We'll make some sentences. Okay, let's see. Okay. This book is excellent. What is the object?
No object.
So this is an equation. What? So it's an equation. The book just has the quality of being excellent. We are studying the book. What is the subject? And the verb? I think we have to say are studying the object, the book. But if I say the book is excellent, it means the book that just has that quality of being excellent. So in English, these have the form of to be as the copula. Copula means what joins the two. But, you know, this is the point they're making. But in equational sentences, in Pali, or actually you should remove in, but equational sentences in Pali do not require a copula to be expressed with either a noun or an adjective. So some examples, eso dhammo sanantano. So this would be, we would translate in English, this Dhamma is eternal. So you don't need a word that means is. You could just state it like that. Or else you could also have the word eso dhammo sanantano hoti. Or ayang papaniko abubbo. This merchant is incompetent. So you don't need a word that means is. Kichang jivitang. Life is difficult. Panchupadana kanda dukkha. So the five aggregates subject to clinging. Dukkha. You just say suffering. You don't have to say are suffering. So that's with an adjective, a noun and an adjective. Then they say you could also have an equation between two nouns. So etang sasanam, this is the teaching. Or I could say, for example, mama satta Gautamo Nama. My teacher is named Gautama. So here the subject Mama Satta. Satta is master or teacher. And then Gautamo is his name, is Gautama. Or Bhagava Mama Achari Mama Satta Bhagava Buddho. My master is the Blessed One, the Buddha. So you don't have to say, you can have hoti, but not necessary. You would say, Mama Satta Bhagava Buddho Hoti. But you can drop the Hoti.
Bhante, what does predicate mean?
I think it means when you have a subject and then there's a quality that's ascribed to the subject. The quality is called the predicate.
Thank you, Bob.
Shall we go to some reading passage?
Please.
Then we'll finish the grammar next class. Because my brain is getting burnt out. Explaining it. So we'll start off and we'll see how these principles that we've learned apply. So we'll go to the first set of reading passages, page 14. Okay, so it begins. Not so easy with verse, but they begin with some verses from Dhammapada. Okay. Kicho manusa pati labo. Okay, good. Yeah. Good. You repeat after me. Kicho. Yeah. I'll break it down so you get each word distinctly. Manusa pati labo. Okay, so the word kicho means difficult or hard. That's Chinese nan. Yeah. And then manusa means human being. And patilabho means to obtain or to gain. So this means the gaining of the human state or human life. So difficult is obtaining human life or human existence. So you see here, this is an equational sentence. And because it's verse, it makes it concise, so it doesn't use a word like hoti. But when you see it, you see kicho is an adjective, difficult, and the noun is manusa patilabho. Patilabho is gaining or obtaining. Manusa. Normally it means a people or a human being, but here the human state. Kichang. Okay, now you could repeat. Kichang.
Kichang.
Machanang jivitang. So kichang means difficult again. And then the counterpart of what's being described, the subject, is jivitang, which means life. And this is the life goes with machanang. What grammatical form, machanang, what case is it? It looks like
genitive,
but it's not.
Accusative.
Not accusative. Genitive, what?
Plural.
Right,
plural.
Genitive plural. The word macha means immortal. It's actually based on the verb marati, which means to die. So marati means to die, and those who die are mortals. So the meaning is difficult, then we have implied is the life of mortals. Okay, then we'll do the third line. Kichang. Okay, you repeat. Kichang.
Kichang.
Sadhamma Savanam.
Sadhamma Savanam.
Can anybody tell me the meaning of the first word?
Difficult.
Right.
Difficult.
It's too difficult?
Yeah.
Anybody who doesn't find it difficult? Oh, you mean it means difficult?
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody fill out the rest of the meaning? You should know it.
True.
Yeah.
Savanam.
Humans?
No. Where are humans?
Savanam. Does that mean to know? Savanam.
Not quite.
Hearing.
Yeah.
Oh, hearing.
Yeah, but I think Venerable Sachinanda has unfair advantage because we recite. Yeah, so difficult is hearing the true teaching, the true doctrine, or the good doctrine. In other words, it's rare to have the opportunity to hear the good Dharma. Then next one, kicho. Buddhanam upado.
Buddhanam upado.
Anybody want to tackle this one? Go on.
Difficult.
Okay, that's the sense, but get it grammatically.
Difficult is the Buddha's attainment.
No, not the attainment. Of Buddhas. This is plural, genitive plural. So difficult is the arising of Buddhas. Again, difficult in the sense of rare. Difficult to meet is the arising of Buddhas.
I'm sorry, there was error. How
do
I say it?
What is that?
I was apologizing because I said the wrong vocabulary and it threw off something.
So upada arising is, you know, the appearance in the world, we could say. So difficult
Bhante,
is the... What is that?
Sorry, Bhante, go ahead.
No, you ask your question.
What's the translation of the first one?
The first word? Or the first line?
Oh, the first sentence, yeah.
Difficult is the obtaining of the human state or human existence.
Thank you,
Bhante.
Buddhanam.
Buddhanam. Is that genitive in this sentence?
Yeah, this is genitive plural. The arising of Buddhas. Okay, let's take the next verse. Sabba papasa akaranam kusalasa upasam. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm supposed to explain. We'll go through reciting the whole verse, then I'll explain it. Because we always do this one, it's just one verse. Kusalasa. Upasampada. Okay, this big word I'll break down. Sachita. Pariyodapanam. Etang. Buddhanam. Sasanam. Okay, so in this verse, first, we're taking the first line. Sabba papasa, what case?
Is
nominative.
Genitive?
No.
Genitive or dative?
You have to choose one. What?
Is dative singular?
Dative.
Dative singular.
No.
Genitive.
Genitive
singular.
Genitive plural. No, you have to learn, you have to get more familiar with the tables. It's genitive singular. And it means. Yeah. Sabba means all, and papa means evil. So this means of all evil. Then the noun karanang. Do you know what karanang means?
No.
We had a verb karoti. So karoti means does. So karanang means what? That's a karanang is not doing. So karanang is doing, and akaranang is the negation, the negative of karanang. So it means the not doing of all evil. Then we have the next line, kusalasa upasampada. What case is kusalasa?
Genitive singular.
genitive singular.
Singular.
And upasampada, what case?
Is feminine.
It's feminine, but what case?
No. Nominative.
Right. Okay. It's nominative. How many?
Many.
Singular. Okay. Singular. So it's singular feminine. Now upasampada, sort of in monk's talk, means the full ordination, but it also has another meaning, which is acquiring. So in this case, it's the acquiring of the good. Then we have the third line. This is a three-part compound. So there's a prefix, sa, S-A, which means one's own. This is like, functions very much like the Chinese.
Sa.
Wonderful. So it means one's own. And citta, what is citta?
Mind.
So one's own mind. And then pariyotapana. Yeah, purifying or cleansing. So it's cleansing or purifying one's own mind. Then we have etang, buddhanang sasanang. Okay, so etang means what? What?
This.
This is a pronoun. It's not avang. Avang is, what do you call this? An indeclinable, which means thus, or in such a way. But etang means this. And etang is indicating the not doing of all evil, the acquiring or undertaking of the good, cleansing one's own mind, those three things, buddhanang sasanang. Buddhanang is what case?
Accusative.
What?
Accusative.
Oh.
Accusative or genitive?
I'm sorry,
David.
The teaching of the Buddha.
Right.
Singular.
Singular, no.
Oh.
I think
singular.
Yeah, some of our students here got it. So this is the sasana, the teaching. Whose teaching? The teaching of the Buddhas. Not only Shakyamuni Buddha, but Amitabha Buddha, Kassapa Buddha, Konagamana Buddha, Dipankara Buddha, in the future Maitreya Buddha, all teach the same thing. So okay, so not doing all evil, or not the not doing of all evil, the undertaking of the good, the purifying of one's own mind. This is the teaching of the Buddhas. Any questions? Well, let's take the last verse. Here it's getting a little more complicated. Nahi Vairena.
Nahi
Vairani.
Vairani.
Samantida.
Samantida.
Kudachanam.
Kudachanam.
Avairena cha.
Avairena cha.
Samanti.
Samanti.
Esa Dhammo.
Esa Dhammo.
Sanantino.
Sanantino.
Okay, so this is very well-known verse. So it begins with a strong negation. Na means not. And then the he is just gives more emphasis. It's something like indeed. Then Vairena, what case?
Instrumental.
Okay, I heard it. Instrumental.
Instrumental.
Vairena. You have to recognize ana is instrumental. And the word vaira means enmity or hostility. So, not by enmity. Not by hostility. Then, Vairani, what case?
Is,
oh, that's a neuter, nominative or accusative.
Okay, it's neuter nominative. We'll find out why it's nominative. If you just look at it, it could be either nominative or accusative, but we'll see that it's the subject. So, not by enmity, enmities. Then we have samantida. This is an example of what is called sandhi. I've used that word before. It means joining together. So to get the meaning, we have to break down the sandhi. Sandhi comes, we join. It is a verb, sammati, which is a passive form, which means to become peaceful or to settle down. Excuse me? Calm down. Okay, yeah, calm down. So from that same root, sum, we get samatha, you know, calm meditation, samadhi meditation, and we get upasama, which means to become a state of peace or calmness. And we get in Pali santi, which means peace, the equivalent of the Sanskrit shanti. So, and then this is the verb third person plural. They become calm. They settle down. And then kudachana means at some time. It's a word used in poetry, not in prose. I don't think it's used in prose. So putting it together, not indeed by enmity. Enmities settle down. Oh, Ida. Ida means here. That means in this world. So not indeed by enmity do enmities settle down, become calm here at any time. Or more freely, we could say enmities are never settled here by enmity. And then comes the third line, avarena cha samanti. Okay, what is the meaning of avarena? Very literally.
Non-hostility.
Right, non-hostility or non-enmity. And then cha usually means and, but here it seems to function more like but. And what is the meaning of samanti? Avarena cha samanti.
Ceases.
Yeah, to settle down, or to cease, you could say to cease. So, but by non-enmity, they settle down. Or they become calm. Then Asa Dhammo Sanantino. So we know what Asa is. Now if you go back to page 20, you see, you could have either for the masculine nominative, you could have singular, either aso or asa. Actually, the normal form is aso, but in verse, because they have a meter, and o is considered to be a heavy syllable, and is a light syllable. So I think according to the rule of verse here, they want to have a light syllable. So the O becomes an A. But asa goes with dhammo. So let's make it regular. We'll say aso dhammo sanantano. So aso is this. And aso here is an adjective, pronoun, describing dhammo. This dhamma, in the sense dhamma here is this doctrine or this principle or this law. Sanantano means eternal, everlasting. Okay, so putting it together, it is not by enmity, it is not indeed by enmity that enmities seize here or settle down here at any time, but by enmity, by non-enmity, they are settled, or they cease, or they become peaceful, or they become calm. This is an eternal law or principle. Yeah.
I have a question about the meaning.
Go ahead, ask it.
Enmity could also mean non-action instead of having to do something. Is that correct?
Avirena?
Well, in general, non-enmity, what does that really imply? Non-enmity.
It means overcoming one's feeling of hostility or enmity towards somebody. Some translators translate it positively as love. They say by love the enmities are settled. But maybe that's sort of reading more into the line than is actually stated. But it's overcoming one's enmity. It can be through loving kindness, or it can be through equanimity, or by patience.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
The second one, when you translated enmity settled down here at any time, which word is here?
The word in the second line, samantida. Yeah, samantida is a sandhi. It's joined together, the two words. Samanti, which means to settle down, and ida, here. Yeah, ida is here, meaning in general, in this world.
Yeah. I want to, because this question came up last class too, what is the meaning of non-love? And I felt like if a dog is tethered out to a stake, and we say the dog is tethered,
yeah,
and the way to become the only untethering is the way to become untethered.
Yeah.
Like it leaves a vast array of options of how will the dog figure out how to become untethered versus saying the dog will go to be love.
Yeah.
And it gives them a new tether. I always feel like the reasoning, the simply negating.
Yeah.
Leaves an infinite range of experience to
yeah.
discover what is non-enmity.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah. Yeah, this pertains sort of to interpretation, but I'm just out to teach the language.
Well, I wanted to ask then, does this have a tradition in the Sanskrit or the language of Brahma at the time, the Brahmin class at the time, this tradition of leaving a very open, apophatic expression?
I think also this is typical even of the, you know, the Sanskrit literature of that period, of using a lot of negations. Maybe we'll stop now for the day. It's getting close to 3 o'clock. And to begin another paragraph. We'll take time. But next time, since there's just a little bit of grammar left, then we'll devote most of the time in the next class to the reading paragraphs. Again, you should... I'm not going to go through and call, but it's good that you look through and try to figure these... passages out to the best of your ability. What is that?
She said I might get a call. Polly hotline.
She might get a call.
Polly.
Polly hotline.
Sunday night.
Well, it doesn't hurt if you look through. I should actually. They should have given really the source, the full source reference. But this is. I think it's on Guttara Nikaya, Book of the Threes, the section 2 here. On Guttara Nikaya, Book of the Threes, it could be like Sutta number 19 or 20. Something like that. And then the paragraph 3 here, or the section 3, is on Guttara Nikaya, Book of the Ones. Let me get some idea. Oh, you have the full reference.
I mean, in Chinese translation, it shows all the...
No, I'm trying to find for the English translation.
No, I mean, it refers to which Anguttara source came from.
Anyway, if you just look through the Book of the Ones in the Anguttara Nikaya, this is towards the later part. It's somewhere maybe around the 300s. But that book of the Anguttara Nikaya is very short. So you should be able to find these paragraphs there. And the good way to learn is to look at an existing English translation and just, you know, compare. Then you figure it out. Okay, so let us end with, we have Buddha statue, Buddha image, so we do. Okay. One, two, three.
Thank you, Bhante.
Thank you, Bhante. Thank you, all.
Okay.
Thank you, Bhante.